the very latest from our local ag industry. The Farming Show with Dylan Honkoop is next on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM, and KGMI.com.
We all have our go-tos, right? The doctor you trust, the dentist you rely on, the restaurant you love. What makes them your go-to? It's trust, isn't it? Hi, this is Dan from Bellingham Automotive, your go-to for auto repairs in Whatcom County since 1991. Whether you're using your car for ride-sharing, delivery services, mobile office, maybe just a taxi for your kids and their friends, or it's just personal transportation, we're here to keep you on the road. We're proud to have a team of technicians and service advisors who have been with us for years. They can help you find that strange noise or figure out what that warning light is trying to tell you. They can perform regular maintenance to keep your car up to date and your new car warranty intact. We know you're busy, so we also offer a local shuttle service and an after-hour drop-off and pickup options to help take the hassle out of your auto repair. So if you don't have a trusted go-to for your vehicles, please give us a call at 360-676-5200 or visit bellinghamautomotive.com to schedule an appointment.
Hey, this is Deanna Haraluk with KGMI's all-new Pet Pulse. I'm a pet parent myself, and we all want the best for our critters, whether they're furry, feathered, hooved, or otherwise. The segment is brought to you by Whatcom Veterinary Hospital. Did you know that 1 in 4 pets suffer from obesity? Pet obesity can shorten your pet's lifespan by up to 2 years. Contact Whatcom Veterinary Hospital for a wellness exam today. And tune in to KGMI's Pet Pulse Wednesdays during the morning news at 6:20 and 7:50, and during the afternoon news at 5:20, right here on KGMI.
Staying connected with your community each Saturday at noon with KGMI's Community Connection as local business leaders share their expert advice. Sponsored by
Lighthouse Mission Ministries, Dewey Griffin Subaru, Feller Heating and Air Conditioning, Contact Counseling, and Guided Solutions.
Community Connection, Saturdays at noon on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham, and streaming live at mybellinghamnow.com.
It just keeps getting worse. So many pressures on farming. And people are to the breaking point. We see farms going out of business as a result of the additional pressures, you know, whether it's fuel costs or questions about water rights or loss of farmland to buffer proposals. And there's so many things. And of course, another pressure that's hugely driving costs on a lot of crops that are special and important to Washington State, specifically that are labor intensive, are labor costs, not only, you know, minimum wages and higher minimum wages in areas where the guest worker program is used, but also now agricultural overtime, as we've talked a lot about on this program, has driven costs up. And what to do, a lot of farms are to the point where the only way they can survive is to back away from giving people that many hours because they just can't pencil what it costs to pay time and a half if people during a busy season are working beyond 40 hours a week. Welcome to the Farming Show. Dylan Honkoop here on KGMI. You don't have to take my word for it, though, on this. We have a pear farmer joining us, an orchardist from Kashmir, Alex Lanusa, joins us on the program. He's somebody that I met this fall, actually during harvest time, and talked with a bunch of his workers there who are very frustrated with this overtime situation because it's meant less hours, less money in their pockets. And Alex, very frustrated as well because it's created more headaches for him, more costs for him, and it's putting the future of his farm in question. And Alex, thanks for being here. Talk about what this situation has meant for your farm overall so far. You know, this is something that we talked about, and I imagine things are only that much more tough now that we're into 2024, and that threshold for overtime is all the way down to 40 hours a week.
Yes. First of all, thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about this. It's really, really tough for us farmers to tackle this one now, you know, overtime. It is very difficult because the price went up, the minimum wage went up, everything goes up and our prices on pears are slightly below last year. So that does not help at all.
And probably over the last 10 or 15 years, it probably hasn't gone up that much either. I know that's the case with the fruit crops here in Western Washington, that there's a general trend, but it doesn't anywhere close to keep up with the cost of inflation and the cost of living.
True. Yeah. No, they've been exactly. No, they've been where they're at or slightly below. You know, they're just it hasn't been a good year, honestly, in a while. And it's because, you know, and now everything more expensive and it just makes it worse.
What are you thinking in terms of your farm right now? I know when I talked with you during harvest, you were saying you weren't sure what was going to happen with your farm.
No, and we're still not sure. You know, things keep going like this. How many red number years do you really support? You know, that's nobody can handle more than one, honestly.
Yeah.
So if things continue going the way they are, we will pull the pear trees out and sell for housing. Lots. That's all we can do.
There it is right there. I mean, and that's what people don't want. They don't want to see small family farms go away. They don't want to see productive, rich farmland that's right now producing food instead be paved over and put houses on. But you're in a situation where, like you said, red numbers, you know, being in the red, you can't do that year after year after year. Your banker is going to say, forget it. You're done. You're bankrupt. I mean, if you keep going, that's what happens, right? And so what other choice do a lot of folks like yourself have but to go that route and say, we're done? Well, why? And then what happens to the land?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, what happens is that, you know, you pull out the trees and you plant houses. And you'll never get the farming ground again. You'll never recover that. And then we'll be in the buying fruit from another country that honestly, you know, that they don't do or don't follow your global GAP programs that we follow here for food quality, for food safety. They don't follow any of that. So they can farm for cheaper. Their workers only get not even a quarter of what we pay here. So they can afford to do that, and then we're going to have to buy that fruit.
Well, because there won't be Washington fruit in the store anymore.
There won't be, exactly.
And yeah. You know, it's interesting. You told me about this issue of you know, what to do when you can't make the numbers work anymore and having, you know, the specter of having to sell out for housing, like you said, which most farmers don't want to do. You know, they don't want to see their beautiful orchards go away. And same thing over here in Western Washington, the dairy farms, the berry farms, et cetera, they don't want to see those go away. But if they have no other choice but to go bankrupt or do that, it's heartbreaking. And you talked to me about that when I was out there, and I have always thought of that as more of a Western Washington problem. And I was not aware just how much that was starting to happen in Eastern Washington now too, but it's already happening there, right? I mean, you were pointing out different, you know, areas just around you where it's already starting to occur.
Yes. No, and not only around me. We already started doing that. We already started taking some acreage and dividing that into some lots to sell so we can get money to keep farming.
Just to be able to make ends meet.
Exactly. So we already started doing that because we can't afford it.
Alex, and again, we're talking with Alex Lanuza. He's a farmer in Cashmere, Washington, grows pears. He's done other tree fruit as well in the past. Talk about your story a little bit. I mean, a lot of this, you know, we're talking about wages and labor pressures. And it's not just wages that are pressures, but it's also just the availability of labor, trying to find people who will do the work. You grew up in that realm working on farms, right? You know how this all goes.
Exactly. Yes. So I started working in the orchards back in 1985.
Wow.
Started working in the orchards and as you know, started spraying, started mowing, and then as the years went by, I was able to buy into an orchard And that's how I became, I guess you can say, a real farmer or a farmer with orchard. And in the past, I always worked in the orchard. So I've been in the orchard for the last 35 years, been working in the orchard. Yes. And the thing that the workers liked back then was you could work 60 hours with no problem. And even though, you know, we're getting paid minimum wage, we had enough money to actually, you could by then you could qualify to buy a house and you still have a little bit of money left over to take your wife out to dinner. Mm-hmm. Now, even though our rates are higher, minimum wage is twice. Now, minimum wage is $16.25. Back then, it used to be $8. Mm-hmm. But now we only work 40 hours at 16 something. You know, we're making $500 a week. Mm-hmm. So that you're making $2,000 a month, doesn't qualify, doesn't get you to buy a house for your mortgage payment, let alone everything else that comes along with it. You know, your car payment, you can't.
What do you say, you know, since you've been on both sides of this coin, as the farmer, the orchardist now, you've been the farm worker as well, you know how it all works together or doesn't work as it seems like it's heading to now. How do you explain this to people who say, well, why don't you just pay overtime and people deserve overtime? And, you know, there's a lot of those conversations out there and people who haven't been around farming don't generally understand that there is a difference, but how do you explain it and how do you show that it's not just farmers being greedy and withholding wages from people that they otherwise should deserve?
It's very easy. Our prices per pair doesn't justify us being able to pay the overtime. It's not that we're greedy and we don't want to pay it. No, we can't pay it. That's why we're complaining, because we cannot pay it. The workers know, they know too, that they're not going to get overtime because the farmers are not rich. The farmers don't have the money. So they, instead of waiting for 5 hours of overtime in the week, they prefer to work 10, 8, 18 hours, whatever they need to work more. They prefer that than to wait to see if they might get 5 hours of overtime.
Yep. And that's what I did when I was working on the farm. When I was young, you know, because I grew up on a red raspberry farm over here in Western Washington. I wanted to get as many hours as I could, and I know that if I would have been required to be paid time and a half over 40, it would have been like, well, okay, whoa, at 40 hours, that's it.
Exactly.
And I would have been ticked. Honestly, I would have made a lot less money in my summers, because that's when the hours are there. You can't just pick up the hours in the fall or the winter, you know, depending on the season and the crop that you're dealing with. You have to get the hours when they're there, because they're not there year round.
Exactly. That's the thing, you know. And that was a good thing, I guess, about working in the orchards and the agriculture, because you could work 10 hours a day. Actually, we got to work 12 hours a day when there's a lot of work and the farmers need you. And it was awesome. We felt we had good fat checks. Now, even though, like I say again, even though the minimum wage is up, they're not going to get them. So you start losing interest of working in the orchard, because you can work 40 hours in the orchard, but you can also work 40 hours any other job.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. Why people would still work, you know, it's hard work. And
it is,
you know, so some people have said, you know, why does anybody do this farm work? Well, it used to be a way that you could make a lot of money quick if you wanted to. And that's going away. So it's really exacerbating the problem that people have complained about, that people can't make very much money doing farm work. Well, they're actually making that worse with this rule.
They're making it worse because everybody knows that for the agriculture, we are low on labor guys. You know, there's not many workers out there. The third generation kids don't want to look towards the orchards. They don't want to work in agriculture. They rather, you know, have a job in an office with a computer and they're fine. You know, that's what they want to do. They don't want to go back in the orchard. So now let's say I need 10 guys in the orchard to work for me for the season. Well, now I'm going to have to bring 14 guys in order to get my job done and keep it on the 40 hours. Okay, we don't have 10 guys. Do you think we're going to get 14?
Yeah.
We're not.
Exactly.
It's going to be harder. It's going to be harder. Yeah.
This is the Farming Show on KGMI. I'm Dylan Honkoop with Save Family Farming. I'm talking with Alex Lanuza. He's a farmer in Cashmere, Washington, which for those of you who haven't been there recently, as I have been multiple times lately, it's been awesome to get over on the east side and see some of the different farming over there, especially all the orcharding that goes on. That's just outside of, say, Wenatchee. Lots of folks familiar with that, kind of between Wenatchee and Leavenworth. People know where that is. So that's what we're talking about, that hilly country out there. It's really great for tree fruit, like what Alex grows with pears and a lot of other, you know, cherries and certainly a lot of apples. Wenatchee, known as the apple capital of the world. Speaking of the capital, Alex, there were a lot of workers that came to the state capital just a number of days ago. Talk about that as well, the message that they were sending there. That was pretty amazing to see.
Yes, that was. It was a big turnout. And all those workers were there because they know that they're not going to benefit at all from the overtime. They rather work than wait for overtime, you know, or rely on the government. Mm-hmm. You know, they rather work than to go and ask for food stamps. They rather work. So that's why they were there.
Yeah. What was the nature of the conversations you were having with the workers around there? What were they saying to you? I think, you know, the TV cameras captured what they were chanting as far as no overtime, we want to work. What were some of the stories that you were hearing from folks?
Well, some of the stories were that, hey, with my 40 hours, I'm not going to pay my rent. So that's what they were worried about. Hey, 40 hours is not going to pay my rent. We need to work. And yes, honestly, we know we need to work. So letting them work will benefit them more than wanting to wait for the overtime.
Now, of course, some out there also are saying, well, you know, farming just has a business model problem. Obviously, the first thing you should do, and I'm paraphrasing some Twitter chatter about this issue on posts that we've done recently at Save Farming on Twitter, the Save Family Farming Twitter account, people responding saying, well, farming, obviously, if you can't pay your workers what they are owed, air quotes, you know, as far as overtime, then you must have a bad business model. And you need to figure out something else in terms of profitability to be able to pay people better. What would your response be to those folks? I think, you know, are they ready to get their fruit from somewhere else?
Exactly. That's our bad model right there. It's our price. It's our price that we're getting paid for our product, you know?
Yep.
Yes. And they complain about the price. But yes, they're not supporting us. So yeah, I guess that's what they're going to do. They're going to end up getting it from another country. So, you know, if we pull our orchards out, then they're going to be happy.
Yeah. That's a sorry state of affairs if that's where we end up. But that's what this is pushing. And it's just, it takes a lot to get people to believe that it's true. We're not crying wolf here. We're not making up a narrative. We're not just trying to protect people who are trying to get rich off of, you know, workers, as some of the false narratives have gone. This is real, as we are saying. Alex, did you happen to watch that hearing that happened a few days after the rally in Olympia, where this idea of seasonality was brought up, the proposal, Senate Bill 5476 that came up again? People talking about a 12-week window where people would be allowed to go up to 50 hours a week, let workers make more money, and help farmers get crops in. Did you watch that hearing? Do you have any reaction to some of the things that were said about that?
Honestly, I did not. I did not. I wanted to, but I was on the orchard working with the guys, so I did not get a chance. I think it was at 10 o'clock, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I didn't.
No, and that's okay because you're actually doing things. And what was depressing about that meeting was, you know, there were activists who came and testified against this bill that would help farm workers make more money. And the activists claimed to advocate for farm workers, yet they were advocating against the bill that would help farm workers. And interestingly enough, they were even mentioning the rally that happened, saying that those workers, and again, I'm paraphrasing here, didn't know what they were talking about or were had been deceived by the farms into, you know, asking for no overtime. And they just really didn't know what was best for them, what was how it came across. I don't know if you've heard any of that or seen any of that on social media or anything like that, but how do you respond to people who are, you know, pushing against something that's designed to help workers and saying that the workers that are pushing for it and rallying don't know what they're talking about? How do you say that the 300 people that we have all, Alex, did those folks look like they didn't know what they were talking about to you?
Yeah, no, actually, the people who are against it is who don't know what they're talking about. I've had this talk with my workers. I've had this talk more than once, and they know that this is not benefit for them. This is only shrinking their check. You know, every 2 weeks they're shrinking their check. So they were everybody that was there knows exactly what was going on, knows exactly what they were asking for.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, if they were there, it's because they are totally against the overtime because they would rather work than sit around and wait for the overtime.
Yep. Yep. And I think it's, you know, I would say it's offensive and insulting that these people were trying to suggest, especially since they claim to advocate for them, yet they were suggesting they,
yeah,
the same people that they say they're advocating for don't know what they're talking about and they know better. It's pretty twisted if you asked me. Alex Lanusa, he's a pear farmer in Kashmir, Washington, checking in with us on the Farming Show this morning. Alex, thanks for what you do, growing great food, and thanks for taking the time to be on the program this morning. We really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for all your help that you're doing for us, and hope we can get somewhere with our message, because if this continues, we're going to have less and less orchards and less fruit. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Henry Winkler. My eyes are very important to me. My eyes connect me with everything I love. I loved my late father-in-law dearly. He always lit up a room, but his vision dimmed with age. He had age-related macular degeneration, or AMD. And since partnering with Apellis, I've learned there's an advanced form of dry AMD called geographic atrophy, or GA. His struggle with vision loss made me want to help others know about GA's warning signs. For some, colors appear dull or washed out. For others, hazy or blurred vision make it hard to see details, like fine print on price tags. Many have trouble seeing in the dark, making driving at night difficult. GA gets worse over time and cannot be reversed. If you think you have GA, don't wait. Treatments are available. Ask a retina specialist about FDA-approved treatments for GA and go to GAWon'tWait.com.
Trust. It's the foundation of every lock and key, and it's the reason Accurate Lock and Security has been serving Northwest Washington for over 90 years, because people know that Accurate are the ones you can trust to protect your valuables. From Abloy to Medico to Keymark, Accurate's high-security locks offer a patented key blank that only contracted dealers can cut, extreme resistance to physical attack, and a variety of security enhancements to bolster your protection. Accurate Lock and Security, the security professional team. Online at AccurateLock.net.
Are you looking for an auto shop that offers honest quality service? Hi, I'm Kirk, owner of Angler Automotive. At Angler Automotive, we strive to make sure that all of your automotive service needs are met. Angler Automotive provides the factory recommended services that are required to maintain your vehicle's warranty. Angler Automotive, outstanding quality with honest, reliable service. Check us out online at anglerautomotive.com.
The latest local news and important topics of the day from the West Mechanical Studio.
Rest easy in a cool home this summer. Contact West Mechanical Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical to add AC to your existing system for as little as $100 a month. Find them at westmechanical.net.
Get the latest news and information 24/7 with KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham. Streaming live at mybellinghamnow.com.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KGMI or the Cascade Radio Group.
Family farming in crisis in Washington State. I'm focusing on this more and more in the advocacy work that I do with Save Family Farming, Whatcom Family Farmers here locally, and so many pressures. You know, we've been talking about family farms that are just can't make it anymore. They're going out of business, and lots of different reasons, factors, facets to what is causing that to occur. Family farms that just can't make it anymore. Get big or get out. And even the big guys are struggling here in this state. Of course, you know from listening to this program that one of the big pressures is labor and the cost of doing business. Welcome to the Farming Show this morning. I'm Dylan Honkoop here on KGMI. Glad to have you with us on your Saturday morning to get caught up on farming issues. Here on the Farming Show, as we do, labor, one of the big issues, and you know, there are other things, just the access to people, and you know, having enough people to get the work done is one of the challenges. But then, you know, pay is already quite high. Minimum wage is high here. The AWER now, which is in some ways a de facto even higher minimum wage, not just for guest workers that we've talked about here on this program, but really for a lot of workers in particularly ag heavy areas of the state, in Eastern Washington in particular, that's almost $20 an hour now. And, you know, folks have viewed that as a win for workers, but it's a burden for farmers. And then the issue that I want to tackle and get back to that we've talked a lot about here on this program is overtime and the new restriction that Washington has placed on workers and farms, saying that workers cannot work over 40 hours a week. That's where the threshold is down to now here in Washington. Agricultural workers cannot work more than 40 hours a week without being paid time and a half, which is something that many farms cannot afford. So it's resulting in fewer hours for farm workers. This is the phenomenon. This is what has been happening. And this is one thing that's pushing, you know, we talked with April Clayton of up in Arondo. That's what is one of the big factors that forced them out of business as a small family organic orchard. And the story is repeated far too often. Well, there have been attempts for relief for this, and there are some encouraging signs, I'm happy to report. Granted, not anything close to what we would like to see. But joining me right now on the program is the state senator, and it's an honor to have him with us here, the state senator who championed what has been the biggest potential opportunity for relief, not only for farms and farmers, but for farm workers who are being hurt by this, like we just talked about. State Senator Curtis King of the 13th District, he was the prime sponsor of this bill that we've talked a lot about. To bring seasonality, as it's called, a set time where things are busier on the farm. A farm could choose the time frame that this would occur for 12 weeks when workers would not be subject to that restriction and would be allowed to pick up more hours and make more money without having, you know, the farm be penalized for that with higher wages even yet than they're already paying. Senator King, thanks for being here. This plan now, it got two hearings, which was unusual last year and this year. People still talking about this idea, even though technically your bill is dead. How are you feeling about this issue now after the battles that have really been fought over this? And in, from some perspectives, to no avail, even though I think there are signs for hope. What's your mindset now on this important issue?
Well, thank you for having me on. It's an honor to be with you this morning. There were signs. I would tell you that the hearing, I asked the chair, because I'm the ranking member on Labor and Commerce, and I asked the chair to hear the bill again. She said, yes, I'll hear the bill, but I'm not moving it. Hmm. I mean, that was her commitment. So we did hear the bill, and we had a very nice young lady come that spoke to us when we had the hearing, and in tears told us about them closing their farm, shutting it down, and that the number of farm workers that had been with them, I think, for generations, that they are going to have to let go, that will no longer be working there. And the tragedy of that, because they were basically families. They had been with them so long, they felt like they were part of their family. But we've created this system that small farms are just going out of business because of the burden that we've put on them. And overtime is absolutely one of the biggest. We've tried to get seasonality in. We did it at a level where it was 12 weeks, 50 hours a week before you had to pay overtime. And that's too big a burden. Although I would tell you, I believe every other state that has ag overtime has the seasonality. Yep. New York is 60 hours, I believe. Oh, I know it's 60 hours, and I believe it's for 15 weeks. We tried to just get something, you know, in the system, and they won't even consider that. Now, after they heard this young lady, then as you say, Senator Kaiser started to think about that we're losing these farms. I believe we lost 728 family farms last year, and we're going to be that many or more this year. I can almost guarantee you that. And she says, well, we can't, I don't want to lose our family farms. And so Senator Saldana, who in my opinion is the prime instigator of the ag overtime along with everybody else, came up with this. Well, we're gonna put forth $250,000. If you meet this criteria, the farm can apply for part of that, up to $20,000, to help pay for overtime. Well, $250,000 is like 14 family farms that could apply for this fund if you meet the criteria. I mean, it's like a drop in the bucket is all it is to try and say, oh, look at what we tried to do. And I mean, the ramifications of this ag overtime is just phenomenal. I mean, so we had a bill, again, Senator Saldana brought up a bill about we need to collect data on the H-2A workers. And when she spoke to it on the floor, and it's several hundred thousand dollars to collect this data. And ESD said, okay, well, we'll collect the data, but we don't need it. We don't want it. We can't use it. So who's going to use it? Nobody could tell me. But she said, oh, we need this data so we can see what's happening out there. We need to understand. One of the things she said on the floor was, we need to understand why there aren't more hours for our farm workers. And that just sent me over the edge. And when it was my turn to talk, I said, we all know why the hours aren't there. It's because of overtime. We've told you that from when you started this process.
Exactly right. I mean, a lot of this unfolded just as predicted. And, you know, there were naysayers at the time who said, oh, you know, it's just the typical pushback from, quote unquote, from industry.
Right.
Honestly, what I've been focused on here, Senator King, and State Senator Curtis King is our guest right now on the Farming Show. I'm Dylan Honkoop here on KGMI, talking about this issue of agricultural overtime and what it really means. I've been focused on, this is harmful to farming, but it's also harmful to the farm worker. That is the person, that is the community this was supposed to help. And it seems that some people just are so mathematically challenged that they're not able to see that when someone doesn't have the bottom line to be able to stay in the black and pay overtime, they have two options. Either they pay the overtime and go out of business, which, as you're talking about, how many farms going out of business? You're talking about April Clayton testifying in that hearing. We had her on the program here talking about that heartbreak of them having to shut down. It's a heartbreaking story. Those folks are losing jobs then. How many workers lose jobs in that scenario? Okay, or the other option is what we're seeing happening, people's hours being limited so the farm is able to stay in the black. And each worker essentially is getting a smaller piece of the pie, which it's mind-boggling to me, Senator King, when we hear these activists talking about, you know, what's best for the worker, yet not listening to the very worker saying, this isn't working for us. It's clearly a political play. And I think that goes to what you're talking about with this issue with ESD needing to collect more info that they don't even need. There's a bigger political game going on here. And I've said it before, and some people thought I was a little bit over the top, but I think it is true that the farm worker, the people who farmers actually do care about as much as the activists say they don't, the farm worker is being used as a pawn in a bigger game here, and it's heartbreaking to watch it unfold.
Well, and I think you're exactly right. I mean, you have farm workers that are used to working 50, 60 hours a week. And if you think about that, if they're making $20 an hour, you know, at even at 50, you know, you're making $1,000, I believe it's $1,000 a week.
Yep.
So now all of a sudden you're only working 40, and now it goes to $800 a week. I mean, how are you going to make up that $200?
Well, you're going to get another job.
Well, this is the problem. We're forcing them, I believe, we're forcing them to look outside of farming.
Yep.
We suggested at one time that there in areas around the state that there be a clearinghouse. If this is what we're going to do, where a farm worker could call in and say, hey, I did my 40 hours at this farm. I want to work 20 more. And they could be sent to another farm to work another 20 hours or whatever hours they wanted to work, or they could break it up into 30 and 30. I mean, there are ways to coordinate this. I was told by Al and I that was a restraint of trade, that we couldn't do that kind of a thing. And I'm going, so, I mean, it's like, give me a break.
Can't think win about, for losing. I mean,
no, which about, yeah.
How
think about H-2A workers.
Yeah.
H-2A workers come into this country for one thing. That's to work.
Yep.
And now we're saying to them, well, you can only work 40 hours a week because I cannot afford to pay you $30 an hour or $32 an hour to do the work that you do. So what does this mean to them? I mean, they're used to working 60 hours a week. They want to work. They want to work 7 days a week because they want to make money so that they can send it back to their families when they go back, and that's what they live on all year long in whatever country they came from. But no, we're saying 40 hours a week, and that's what they're going to get. And so then how many H-2A workers are going to want to come to the state of Washington when there are other states where they can work in that don't have ag overtime, that they can work all the hours they want? They don't want to be sitting around all weekend long waiting for Monday to come so that they can go put in their 40 hours. I mean, the whole thing is just unbelievable what we have done to the agricultural community. And I would tell you, over the last 5 years, it's been nonstop going after the farming community in this state. And I don't see it slowing down. That's what concerns me, because we're going to end up with mega farming corporations providing all of us the things that we want, the fruits and vegetables that we want to partake of.
Well, and honestly, there probably will be just some things that we don't grow, at least not as much anymore, because they're too labor intensive because of all of this pressure. I mean, there are certain crops that are going to fade away. Some of that stuff has already started to happen. And what you're talking about, Senator King, is exactly why I'm saying family farming is in crisis here in Washington State. I recognize that Tom Vilsack, Agriculture Secretary, said that at the federal level recently in his comments about the new ag census numbers. I'd say it's that times, you know, another factor of of intensity here in Washington. It is It's that much worse here, as you're explaining. And again, all these things that we're talking about, particularly with labor, are all done under the guise of trying to help workers, yet it's not helping workers, as you've described, as we've talked about here. One of the signs that I see, at least the conversation is beginning to change, and you mentioned this earlier, is Senator Kaiser was one of the stalwarts against this whole idea, remains against this whole idea of allowing flexibility for workers to be able to work more hours at certain times of the year, as you had proposed with your bill 5476, Senate Bill 5476, which now is entirely dead, and I hope, you know, new efforts come up and move forward to bring some kind of relief in some way, shape, or form for farmers and farm workers on this. But Senator Kaiser, your colleague on that labor committee in the state Senate, is dead set against this. Clearly, her background is labor. The labor movement, you know, a 40-hour work week is a basic tenet to them. It's darn near a religion, from my perspective on it. Facts be damned. Don't listen to what this is actually doing to people. It has to be. It's a matter of human rights. Never mind if people are making less money because of it. So she has this background, but she had been so opposed to any of this. And last session, not this past one, but the year before, in 23, had, you know, basically suggested and alluded to this belief that farm workers had been misinformed, and that's why they didn't understand about overtime and how it was working. Of course, there was blowback from that. Now she is admitting, in a piece by Crosscut a little bit earlier this year, right after some of these meetings, she said, there is a legitimate concern about the economic viability of the state's agricultural industry, particularly small family farms. Quote, we need to address that, she said. I see that as progress, that she's at least acknowledging that there is a problem, and folks of her bent are seeing that there is an issue here. But then she continues, she says, but we're not going to do it on the back of farm workers. I don't know about you, Senator King, but I reacted to that saying, you don't want to do it on the backs of the farm workers, yet you won't listen to what the farm workers themselves want, what they're rallying for.
Yep, there were rallies around the state, on the particularly on the east side of the state. I mean, they had upwards of 500 farm workers at some rallies. I mean, you know, they want to work, and we won't let them, because the family farm cannot afford to pay time and a half. It's as simple as that. And they don't want to recognize that fact. And, you know, part of their answer was, well, let's let everybody else in the state through the use of taxation. We'll use the tax money to help subsidize our family farms to pay the overtime. I don't think that's the answer either. I mean, we have gone after ag. It started with going after the dairies and our not so Supreme Court and the ruling they made on dairies, and the audacity for them to say that the not so Supreme Court to say that those dairies, even though they did exactly what the law said, had to go back for 3 years and pay retroactive overtime to anybody that worked over 40 hours a week. And I would tell you, we had hearings that year, and dairy after dairy came to us and said, you do this to us and we will be out of business.
Yep.
And one dairy, as I recall, had 300 employees. And the gentleman that came and testified was a Hispanic gentleman. He said, I've worked at this dairy in high school. I worked at this dairy and I started to go to WSU because of the money I made at that dairy, helped me pay for my education. I worked there during the summer to pay for my formal education at WSU. I've graduated. I am now the HR director for that very same dairy. We have 300 employees. We cannot afford to pay 3 years of retroactive overtime. And if you force this on us, we will be out of business, and those 300 employees will not have a job. Everybody on the committee heard that.
Yep, that's exactly right.
They didn't care.
That was Miguel Navarrete, who I've had on my podcast talking about that and sharing his story. That's exactly right, and that's exactly what he said. And who is going to start paying attention to what the workers themselves actually have to say and want versus what a political movement is going to tell workers what they think is best for them rather than listening? State Senator Curtis King with us on the Farming Show this morning. Senator, we're just have less than 30 seconds left. What's the political future for this? Is this going to continue to be an issue, or am I off base in feeling any level of optimism here?
Well, I'm up for reelection, and they're playing games with that, but that's a whole different story. But if I'm back, I can guarantee you that bill will be dropped again. And we will make concerted efforts that it gets heard and see whether we can have some progress with it. Like I say, every other state that has ag overtime has seasonality much beyond where we wanted to take, yet we're still getting pushback. It's amazing. So,
State Senator Curtis King, we really appreciate you taking the time to check in with us here this morning on the Farming Show. And more importantly, we appreciate the good work that you've been doing, listening to farmers and listening to farm workers when many don't seem to want to do that or have the courage to do that when the answers aren't easy in Olympia. So we appreciate your great work on that. And we hope you have a great Saturday. Thanks for being here this morning.
Thanks for the opportunity. Good talking with you.